B-Pod Studios.
All right, 4:30. It's the Mike Missanelli Show. Football Friday. And this is a very exciting time for me to have two legends on the radio. In addition to Brian Westbrook this hour, the man who will call the playoff game, Eagles-Seattle at Lincoln Financial Field. He is the unofficial, but I call him the official, national broadcaster of the Mike Missanelli Show. The great Al Michaels joins us on the Comcast Business Hotline. Hello, Al.
Mike, you can't call me a legend in the company of Brian Westbrook because he was a true legend. Had a chance to cover him so often on the Monday night years before we went over to Sunday night. But, Brian, I loved watching you play. How you doing, man?
I am doing very good, Al. How are you, my friend? You have done a great job. Sunday Night Football has been awesome as you guys continue to grow there. It's just great to continue to see you do your thing every Sunday.
Well, you know, the great thing about doing this is I still have a lot of passion for it. And people say to me after all of these years, you know, do you still get excited? You know, we did that game in Seattle last Sunday night. I mean, that was fantastic. It's exhilarating to watch a game like that, to come down to the wire like that. And, of course, everybody in Philadelphia was remotely interested, you might say, in the outcome of that one. And to have a game like that, to have an ending like that, and the next day, so many people around the country are talking about it. So, you know, that's why we love sports. You get a game like that. And all I know is that the last three Eagles games that we have done in the playoffs, and Chris Collinsworth and I were talking about it today, we did the Atlanta game, which went right down to the end in the playoffs. We did the Super Bowl, of course. And then last year, you got the double doink. So I've had a lot of drama in the last three games that we have covered with the Eagles. And looking for more on Sunday night, guys.
Yes. Let's get into what you see now. Now you're going through all your pregame meetings and all these things. There are two schools of thought here. One is that the Eagles are not prepared for a team like Seattle and that momentum they gain once against lesser teams. But the other thing is this is a huge home field advantage where they've been really good as underdogs in playoff situations under Doug Peterson. How do you see this, Al?
Well, there's no doubt about that. You know, we were with Doug within the last couple of hours, went out to practice today and sat with some of the guys. And I asked him to describe the season, and he said, exhausting but exhilarating. Because he's had so much to do, personnel changes, game plans, all of the rest. You're bringing in all of these guys that nobody's ever heard of before the season and even during the season. Changing the game plan, doing everything that has to be done in a situation where you're 5-7 and you've lost three in a row and you come off that dispiriting loss to the Miami Dolphins and then, you know, run the table at the end, you know, albeit against teams that aren't very good. We know that. But I still think, you know, it's a new season and the message maybe is to go 1-0 this week. And why can't you win this game? I mean, what the Eagles have done over the past couple of seasons, it's pretty amazing. You've got the league MVP, the potential league MVP in 17. He gets hurt, and we all know what happens. Foles comes in and leads them on the magical run. Last year, they had to go into Los Angeles and win that big game against the Rams on a Sunday night, and then you get to the playoffs, and you beat Chicago, and you have a 14-0 lead against New Orleans. So this is 3 years in a row now that the Eagles are where they probably shouldn't be, but here they are, and the Seahawks are going to have to deal with them. So, and you also have, I think there's probably a little bit of a new energy in that building right now because you've got all of these guys, the Boston Scots and the Greg Wards and the Robert Davises and all of the guys who have come in and Joshua Perkins and made a mark. So it's almost as if, hey, you know, there's nothing to lose. It's a little bit of house money here. And I don't think the Seahawks are not looking past the Philadelphia Eagles this week.
Let me ask you about the Seahawks quickly, and then, Brian, I know you have a question for Al. Let's read the I'm putting on a balance scale here. Yeah, they're playing with practice squad guys, and they played well against lesser competition. But you know it as I know it. You've been watching NFL for a long time, Al. There's a shelf life to practice squad guys. And when you heighten the level, maybe you don't get the same production. The Eagles right side of the offensive line. Two guys might not play. Zach Ertz may play, but he's going to wear a flak jacket to protect broken ribs that maybe have a puncture or whatever it is. But you saw Seattle last week. Balance that with the look of a team that might be struggling a little bit, the Seahawks.
Well, there's no question. I mean, that is an issue for the Eagles offense. the right side of that line. You know, they're going to go up against the Seattle defense. Meanwhile, you know, they can look at it the other way, too. Clowney, Jadeveon Clowney, has not been what he has been in the past. He's got this core muscle injury that they're calling it right now, what we used to call a sports hernia. They've got some issues themselves. They're also minus Kendricks, and that's going to be very harmful to them as well. You still have got, you know, Bobby Wagner and K.J. Wright, and then they play a great zone in the secondary. But, you know, the 49ers figured out a way to score a lot of points against them. I just think that, you know, this game, you look at all of the games that the Seahawks have played this year, almost every one of them has been a one-possession game. They won most of them. I think they were 10-2. You can look at this matchup and balance the scales or tip the scales one way or another in so many areas, Mike. Another area, which is shocking to me, is we all know that Seattle and Kansas City probably have the two best home field advantages because the crowds are the craziest in those two towns, and the noise level is impossible for the opposition to get through, but they do. This year, the Seahawks, 4-4 at home, 7-1 on the road. Kansas City played great on the road, not as well at Arrowhead. I can't figure that out right now. So the Seahawks are coming in here, you know, having lost only one road game this year. That was at Los Angeles against the Rams on a Sunday night. So, you know, you look at this, you try to look at one side, the other side, and all of that. There's no question. I mean, the Eagles, that right side of the line is so important. But I've seen teams this year come through. And I think the Rams did it on a Sunday night against Chicago earlier this year. They're missing two guys on the right side. They put two rookies in, a third-round pick and a fifth-round pick. They did a great job that night against Khalil Mack. So the great thing about sports is you just don't know what's going to happen.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
I absolutely agree with you. You never know what's going to happen. We've seen the Eagles going a great run here towards the end of the season. We've seen, conversely, the Seahawks lose three out of the last four. But my question is more about Russell Wilson, a guy that everyone was discussing as the MVP for the season until Lamar Jackson just took off and started doing his thing. Over the last couple of weeks, he just doesn't seem like he's been himself. Is it because the run game has changed for him with Chris Carson and Rashard Penny being out, and he's not able to use that play action pass and get the ball deep? Or something happened with this football team toward the middle of the season where offensively they just don't seem to be clicking? Can you put your finger on that at all?
You know, Brian, I think you're right about, you know, that the run game. When they lost Rashard Penny in the Rams game in early December, that was very harmful. And of course, he's the guy that, you know, broke it open when the Seahawks met the Eagles here last month. So they're missing him. Then Chris Carson is great. Lose him, you know, lose another back as well, CJ Procise. This kid, Travis Homer, I mean, last week looked pretty good, but they're down to their, you know, as the Eagles are trying to find, you know, receivers off the street, and the Seahawks are trying to find running backs off the street, and Homer was the guy. And meanwhile, you know, Lynch last week, you know, he looked okay. He had that one dive over the goal line. He had one other, you know, semi-beast mode play. But their run game isn't what it was going to be had Penny come in here with Carson. There's no question about that. I think that you know, Russell's still playing well, but you're right. He doesn't have all of the other parts around him. He hasn't looked as good. But then again, he didn't look great in the first half last week against the 49ers. He looked very good in the second half. So I still think, and you're right, he, you know, he was going to be a co-MVP or certainly 1-2 with Lamar Jackson until December. But look, he's 8 years in the league. This guy's been great.
Al, where does a playoff game in Philly rank for you as a broadcaster?
I love doing it here. First of all, playoff games are a great period. You know, it's lose or go home. It's do or die, whatever you want to call it. And I've always enjoyed, I've always loved coming into Philadelphia. And, of course, early in my career doing a lot of baseball. I did the 76 playoffs, which was the Reds against the Phillies, going all the way back, Phillies-Dodgers in 78 in the playoffs. World Series here in 1983 against the Baltimore Orioles, which didn't end the way that the Philly fans wanted it to. So I have a lot of experience with postseason Philadelphia sports. And I love it. And I've always felt that the great thing about the Philadelphia fans is they are so knowledgeable. We all know how passionate they are, and I tell you guys that. You live here and you know that, and you feel it and you see it. But I always felt that the Philly fans really understood what was going on in the game. So in other words, if an outfielder, when I was doing baseball, would throw to the wrong base, the fans would let him know that. And there were fans in other cities that, you know, were maybe newer to baseball, didn't have the tradition. They wouldn't know what was going on. So the Philly fan always understood the subtleties of the game. And they really get into it. And I'm not going to tell you guys that you can feel it. You get in here, it's passionate. You know, I got here last night and I'm watching the local news, and they've already got like four or five stories about the game on Sunday night. And, you know, the band is playing downtown and the whole thing is going on. So it's a special deal.
You brought up the 78 Dodgers. That's one of the thorns in this town's side. That was the crazy series, wasn't it? Wasn't that the Dick Davalio bunt and Manny Mota pinch hit, and the Davey Lopes beat out a grounder that Boa thought he threw him out on?
You got it right. Exactly right. Yeah.
That was insane, that series.
It was crazy. 76 wasn't very good for the Phillies because, I mean, the Reds.
Yeah, they demolished them, yeah.
78 went four games. The World Series wasn't very good. That ended in five. And, you know, that was one of those endings where it's a Sunday afternoon here and, you know, and the Orioles are dancing around the diamond. And I did that series with Howard Cosell and Earl Weaver. This was the year after Weaver had retired. He would eventually come back and manage the Orioles again. But Earl had to sit in the booth and watch the team that he had led for so many years and helped to build. And then Joe Altobelli comes in and wins the world championship at Veterans Stadium.
What was Cosell like to work with on baseball? I know the football side, there was some angst.
You know, at first it was pretty good. I did a lot of baseball with him through the years. And toward the end, he just got tired of everything. He didn't want to be there. And it was rough toward the end because, you know, you come in and you're doing these games and you want everybody on the crew to be excited about it. And we have one of the great jobs in the world. Everybody who gets to be a part of our crew, not just, you know, on the air, but the production people, the cameramen, the tape operators, we're all excited. And toward the end, you know, Howard just got tired of everything. And that was rough. But I think the last time that he felt that he, you know, really was having a decent time might have been that World Series. And then in 84 and 85, he went off the rails. But I'll never forget, we're wrapping up that World Series game in Philadelphia, game five in 83. And Cosell wants to compliment me. I mean, the game is over. Now we come to the booth. It's me and Weaver and Cosell. And he used to call me Alfalfa. So I don't mind, but that was a name that Bob Uecker gave me, and I love that Uecker gave it to me, and then Howard stole it. And then this was 3 years after the Lake Placid Olympics with the hockey in 1980, and Cosell says to me on the air, Alfalfa, you proved Lake Placid was no fluke. Like, can you imagine that is the way we are signing off? Oh, thanks, Howard. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and of course, Dennis Miller had the albino nickname.
He had albino, right? So I've been Alfalfa and albino. Most of the people now call me albino on the crew, but I love Alfalfa. I wish we'd go back to Alfalfa.
Listen, Al, have a great broadcast. Obviously, we're tuning in. This town is very interesting right now because I don't think it's a town that believes the Eagles can go further than one win, which is kind of like dampening the enthusiasm. Other playoff years, there's always been that carrot that's been reachable. So we'll see about this one.
We certainly will. Can't wait for Sunday night, guys.
Thanks, Al, for being on. Appreciate it.
You bet. Take care, guys.
All right, here he is, Al Michaels, checking in.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.